This is episode number 770 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Connecticut Gamer Con, some of Marvel's sales woes, and also some upcoming shows that we'll be heading to in the next couple of weeks. Our comics this week are Green Lantern number 15, Spider-Woman number 17, Aw Yeah Revolution number 1, and AmeriKarate number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch is denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful, the musically inclined Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well.
We're tired. I know I'm still recovering from seeing Anthrax just a couple days ago. And then 2 days before that, I saw UFO. So I am realizing I'm not as young as I used to be because I am just not recovering.
No, and that's a great segue, Matthew, because this weekend we were at the Connecticut Gamer Con.
Throw that one in there too. Holy cow.
The first annual Connecticut Gamer Con, of course, put on by our friend Mitch Halleck, who is the guy behind Terrificon. This was the very first installment of this show.
Yep.
It happened at Mohegan in the same space that the Terrificon happens in every year. And it was a huge success.
Yep.
This was, if you listen to the interview that I did with Mitch a little while back, you heard us talk about the fact that he's not a gamer.
No.
Like, that's not his thing. And so this first year show was really about putting it out there, trying to, you know, have a little bit of something for everyone, and then seeing how it goes and kind of getting feedback for next year. And it turned out fantastic.
Yeah. I don't know if he wants numbers given. Because he sent me an email about how well they did.
Uh-huh.
But I will say that the attendance was 4 times better than he planned and hoped.
Right.
And so that was huge right there.
Yeah. And what was cool about that is you had some great tournaments, some great Smash tournaments that were there. And a lot of the crowd came for those tournaments, which was really cool. And they had it up on the big screen and they were streaming some of it to Twitch. But you also had rows and rows of tables of consoles ranging from the original NES to the new Nintendo Switch that people could sit down and play. I ended up playing some GoldenEye on Nintendo 64. I ended up playing some Tekken Tag Tournament with my son on PlayStation 3. Like, it was just, there was just a lot of free play games. There was arcade games in the main area when you first walk in that you could play for free. Everything was basically free play. And so coming in the front door, and I think the admission was $5, and then you come in the front door and there's all these free games to play.
Yep.
Plus there was a vendor room. Plus there was the tournaments. Plus there was a costume contest. There was a acapella group by the name of Pixelate, I believe is their name, who in between different events were coming in and were singing theme songs of different video games over the years, and they were amazing. Mm. And so it was really a little bit of something for everything. My son and I went with you, and Parker and I each had our 3DSs with us, and so we were sort of street passing with people that came through, and there was just a lot to do and a lot of great conversations to be had. As usual, surprising no one, we spent the bulk of the day at the table just talking to everyone who would come by the table, and it was a great mix of young and old. It was a great mix of families and kids. And I guess that was the most sort of like encouraging thing for me is lots of kids there with their parents. And there was literally the games that the parents grew up with and the games that the kids are excited about now. And that was really nice. So yeah, we had a blast at that show. And then I'm not sure exactly what the plan is for that moving forward. I know that Mohegan is going through a huge expansion, and their convention center area is going to like almost triple in size to what it is now. So it'll be interesting to talk to Mitch about what that means for the future of Terrificon and for Connecticut GamerCon, because both of those shows are poised to grow as well.
Yeah.
And both of them do very well there. And especially after hearing that this show was a success, now they have a comic book themed show and a gaming show at Mohegan, sort of under the same umbrella. And I think that worked out, it sounds like, better than Mitch could have even hoped.
Yeah. And it seemed like there was a constant flow of people coming in. Because you and I, and most of us when we're sitting at our table, tend to go after a while, yep, saw that guy before. Yep, saw that guy before.
Right.
You never saw that. It was different people all the way through coming through. I think one of my favorite parts was when you would see some young kids there that were all fired up about the games and everything going on. And then their parents had on their gaming gear. They would have on a hat that had something, you know. So everybody, like families, were all into it. And it's really interesting because, I mean, I don't have that in my house because I am not a gamer, but we certainly have it with a few things. We have it a lot with sports, but to have a whole family into one thing, how cool is that?
Yeah. And for me, like, I feel like for, at least for my son and I, like games and music are those things. Like he likes comics too, but he's not a humongous comic fan like I am. Like he likes creators more than the actual comics because he's met some of them over the years and stuff like that. But gaming is a place where he and I have just a ton in common and we play games together all the time. And so this, he told me on the way home, this was the best show that he's been to.
Wow. And he's been to some good ones. So that says a lot.
He said, this is my favorite con, Dad. I really like the show. So, a success all around. So that was really exciting. And then yes, of course, you saw UFO on Sunday night. And then on Tuesday night, I believe we went down to the Oakdale Theater in Wallingford at the Dome.
The Dome.
And saw Anthrax.
Yeah.
And it was Anthrax, Killswitch Engage, The Devil Wears Prada, and a band called Jasta. And it's Jamie Jasta, who is the lead singer of Hatebreed. And I had not seen Anthrax with Joey Belladonna since 1991.
Yep.
I saw them on the Clash of the Titans tour. I've seen Anthrax several times, but I saw them the majority of times with John Bush.
And that's interesting because I've never seen him with John Bush. I've seen him twice before with Joey,
right,
with the classic lineup. It's always been the classic lineup with Dave Spitz there as well.
Yeah, Dan Spitz.
Or Dan Spitz.
Just Dave, in case any of not Dave that we have many brother. Audio files that listen to the show.
Dave was his brother who played bass for Black Sabbath.
There you go.
That's how they got the tour that year.
So in the thing about it for me was that we've seen concert footage of Joey Belladonna over the years where it seemed like he maybe had lost a step vocally.
Yep.
And that was not the case at all on this show on Tuesday night. Like he was phenomenal.
He brought it.
He sounded perfect. Like he hit the notes. He had the stamina to, you know, carry some of the bigger notes and even take it up a notch and stuff. And the crowd was fired up. Like they had the crowd fired up. So that was really great. So yes, it's been a busy week, but here we are to talk about comic books. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, because I think we mentioned this the last time we recorded, was there's been a lot of chatter on the internet over the past few weeks about that retailers meeting that Marvel Comics had, where you had David Gabriel, who's Marvel Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing, who made a comment that a lot of people interpreted to be basically that our fan base didn't want diversity because we ended up seeing sales go down in these books that are sort of categorized as diverse books. And so we are now course correcting, and you'll see as we move into the summer basically that we're getting back to the meat and potatoes superhero stuff. And that, rightfully so, caused a lot of sort of furor, because it's interesting to hear what someone like that says when they are not in front of a journalist or not thinking that that is going to be a conversation that necessarily leaves that room. And I think where the argument has come is there's a lot of people are saying, look, this guy didn't say that Marvel didn't like diversity. He was saying that these particular books that they were putting out weren't selling, and he was just responding to what the sales numbers were saying. So there's been a lot of back and forth about that. But the message that was taken away is that it was their attempt to be more diverse that caused them to fall to second place behind DC. And there was a great article this week on CBR by Charles Paul Hoffman, who basically it says diversity did not kill Marvel sales. And I'm just going to pull out a couple snippets because I think it's worth talking about. He said, last week, David Gabriel, Marvel Senior Vice President of Sales and Marketing, stated in an interview with ICV2.com that retailers have told Marvel. And so apparently ICV2 was at this meeting, but it was a retailer sort of meeting that he was following up with the conversation on. He said, people didn't want any more diversity. They didn't want female characters. That's what we heard, whether we believe that or not. And I don't know that that's really true, but that's what we saw in sales. So he's basically saying that. He says, although Gabriel walked back his original statement a bit the next day, saying, our fans and retailers are really excited about these new heroes, let me be clear. So he says, even though he walked it back, the message was kind of put out there. And he said, the problem with that is simple. The narrative is just not true. He said, as I did some digging into comic sales data, a far more complicated story took shape. Sales on Marvel's superheroes line have slumped across the board since the end of Secret Wars. With only a single ongoing series selling more than 50,000 copies a month to specialty shops. While all new, all different Marvel Now started out strong in October of 2015, it quickly sputtered, with many books hemorrhaging sales, especially after DC's Rebirth relaunch. Mm. And he backs that up with some numbers. He says, prior to Secret Wars, he looked at 24 different series. He said one of the major culprits was the all-new, all-different relaunch. He said at least 24 series continued on after Secret Wars with the same creative team or at least the same writer. So even though it was all-new, all-different Marvel, not a lot changed.
It wasn't all-new.
And he says prior to Secret Wars, these 24 series sold an average of 38,521 single issues through the direct market. But the highest average sales of the most recent issue of the same 24 series was only 22,972, a 40% drop, significantly higher than expected attrition of about 25% over 18 months. Rather than acting as a jumping on point for new readers, all new, all different Marvel Now appears to have acted as a jumping off point, especially where there was a title change that would result in books disappearing from customers' pull lists, as with Astonishing Ant-Man, Captain America, Sam Wilson, The Mighty Thor, and Rocket Raccoon and Groot. For these 24 series, all new, all different Marvel Now created a moment where many readers had to affirmatively decide to continue reading or drop the title, and many apparently chose the latter.
And you and I talked a lot about that, that was – we looked at a lot of that going, okay, well, this is our jumping off point.
We definitely talked about that, right?
I am reading – I figured it out today. I think I'm reading three Marvel books right now. That is Steve Rogers, Captain America, Star Wars, and the new Rocket Raccoon book.
Yep.
That's all I'm reading for Marvel. Three books.
Here's another snippet. He said, another culprit between October 2015 and February 2017, Marvel launched or relaunched at least 104 ongoing superhero series for an average of about six new number ones a month.
And there is your problem.
Yep. He goes on to say, in February 2017, Marvel published only two ongoing superhero series that sold above 40,000 in single issues. The Amazing Spider-Man sold 61,000 and The Mighty Thor sold 40,000. The predecessors of both series were among Marvel's top sellers in 2015, with their last pre-Secret Wars issues selling 88,000 for Spider-Man and 86,000 for Thor. So he's saying prior to Secret Wars, Spidey was at 88,000.
Yeah.
It's now at 61. Prior to Secret Wars, Mighty Thor, 86,000, now 40,000.
And they're not looking at the fact of, like, it's funny because, of course, they jump on, it's the diversity. Okay, so look at, you're looking at a timeline called pre-Secret Wars and post-Secret Wars. Everything's crappy after post-Secret Wars. Let's blame Secret Wars. Let's look at the fact that maybe the comic fans are saying, no more of this crap, no more of these big events, no more of these things that are turning out garbage. Because, you know, nothing – it's you say change for the sake of change.
Right.
But then you said there's no real change either with the creative teams.
And I'll just read the last part. He says, there are many potential explanations for why Marvel sales have declined since Secret Wars. The decision to relaunch titles that were already selling well – a weak slate of new series, reader fatigue with the seemingly unending string of events and crossovers, a desire for more escapist stories at a time when Marvel was prepping for an event about fascism, steep competition from DC's Rebirth relaunch, poor marketing outside of the direct market, etc. But the publisher's current focus with diversity is not among them.
No.
And so I thought he did a really good job in that article of basically saying that has actually very little to do with why Marvel sales have tanked. To me, what jumped out about those numbers was, man, how Spider-Man was selling like hotcakes prior to Secret Wars. 88,000.
That's a lot.
Right? Now 61, still a top-selling Marvel book, but that's almost a 30,000 issue drop-off.
And those 30,000 are either back at DC grabbing books there or they're not reading anything.
Right. And for a lot of people I know, you know, I'm a diehard Spidey fan and apologist, so I have continued reading Spidey throughout. But remember when they were saying that now you're going to have Peter Parker, and I think this was following the Spider Island stuff or Spider-Verse stuff, that it's going to be Parker Industries.
Yep.
And he's going to be an international hero. And a lot of people saw that as the sort of Tony Starkization of Peter Parker and did not go for it. And I think that to me is the bigger problem with what has been going on with Marvel's books as of late, is Marvel have given more reasons for people to jump off books than yes. to jump on them.
Yep.
Because for those of us that are managing a monthly budget where we are, you know, trying to think about how much money am I spending on comics per week, per month, and I only have this much, you're looking at what was $2.99 cover prices from DC and thinking, well, if I dump this Marvel book, I could pick up almost two DC comics. And then you're seeing, oh, well, here comes the next big event. I don't want another event. I know that the next four issues of my favorite book are going to tie into said event. So maybe I'll jump off now and go and read something else. And I was thinking, because we're going to talk about Spider-Woman in a few minutes, the issue of Spider-Woman that just came out is the last one.
Yep.
Okay, so Spider-Woman ends at 17. For me, Spider-Woman has been one of, if not right up with the best Marvel book that has come out over the past few years. But remember, when this first launched, and I want to say it was Secret Wars. It was either Secret Wars or Spider-Verse. When Spider-Woman launched and
Spider-Verse. It came out of Spider-Verse.
When Greg Land was doing yep. the artwork, right? Which I'm so glad they got away from his stuff. I just didn't think he was a match at all for this book.
Not for what they were trying to
then
do
with it. Then you get Javier Rodriguez. Then you get Veronica Fish. Wonderful, right? So, but those first five issues, I think it was, of Spider-Woman, underwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't click. If you got off at that point, you could be forgiven for saying, ah, that book didn't feel like it clicked to me. But man, if you stuck around, then you got 2 years of this absolutely flat out amazing Spider-Woman book. But it was hampered by the fact that it was tied into this yep. crossover to begin with. And I think they think sometimes that having it spin out of a crossover is helpful. In a lot of ways, when you're launching a new book, you're hurting that. And we saw that with, I think that happened with Spidey 2099. You saw it happen. The last time I remember it really killing a book was the Ghost Rider series, when Ghost Rider came out.
The second or third issue all of a sudden became a Fear Itself. It was Fear Itself, right?
I think it was either Fear Itself or it was the Dark Reign or something like that.
I think it was Fear Itself.
But whatever it was,
the cover.
I remember that of the – I think it went 8 issues. And like of the 8 issues, like half of them were tied into this event.
And it was like the second, third, fourth, fifth issue, something yeah. like that. It was,
and so you yeah. have to divert from the story. Like the creator doesn't set out to say, okay, let's think about year one of this book. So we have 12 issues. What do I want to do in those 12 issues? Well, I want to start to introduce my supporting cast, but then I want to take a 4-issue break to delve into this crossover event that's happening. And then around issue 6, we'll come back
yeah.
and we'll actually get into the world that I'm trying to build here. No.
Nope.
Every one of those issues is precious in terms of keeping people on the book and keeping people interested, and not being able to do that is killing some of these series that I think they think they're helping by having them launch out of an event or something yeah. like that. But yeah, I mean that whole, I forget what the guy's name was, David Gabriel, poorly chosen comments for sure.
Yes.
I also think that I think that they were kind of saying that. I think that they were saying, well, the audience, you know, told us that they want to go back to everything that's, you know, everything that's the way it was. And I think that's very reductionist.
Yes.
And I don't think that that is going to help Marvel in the long run. But I was talking to our buddy Daryl about this the other day. My concern for the big two in general is that their solutions to problems are extremely short term.
Yes.
And short sighted. Yeah. It's like, you know, Marvel's thinking about, well, what's going to put us on top right now? Okay, we'll go back and give everybody the heroes that they wanted before, and we'll put everybody back. Hey, maybe we'll even make Peter Parker with Mary Jane again or something like that, and we'll bring all these people back. And then what? So, you get back on top for 6 months, and then people realize, oh, they're just rehashing the old stories from these characters. I actually did want something different.
Yeah.
And then what are you going to do? And so it's the fact that it's constantly relaunching. The numbers are constantly changing. It just feels like a gimmick, and it's giving people too many jumping off points.
And
that's just my opinion.
Yeah. And the thing with the, you know, with these books that featured so much diversity, I think that the books that like, you know, Ms. Marvel, and you even had Moon Girl and
Double Dinosaur. Absolutely.
Those books suffered not because of the diversity or people saying, I don't want diversity in my books. I believe that if you brought back, if Marvel brought back Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, a World War II book, it would suffer the same fate because Marvel is not physically pushing those books like they do the books that honestly don't need the pushing. You don't need to market Spider-Man to death. You don't need to have ads in your comics for Spider-Man when he's your he's one of your bigger selling titles. You need to be pushing those, and you also need to cut down on the shelf space that Marvel is taking up. 17 different Avengers books is hurting Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, ruining chances for any other book to get in.
And the thing is you know, that Ms. Marvel gets thrown into that discussion. Ms. Marvel is one of the best performing Marvel books, and it's probably right up there with Spider-Woman as one of the best books that Marvel's putting out. That's a book that I bought since it initially came out. And to me, that book captures the spirit of what made me fall in love with Peter Parker. Kamala Khan is in the vein of Peter Parker. Mm. Like to me, like that book speaks to me in that particular way. But you know, one thing we didn't talk about is that, and I'm sure it's mentioned in this article because I only took snippets out of it. One of the biggest problems is the stories haven't been that great. And really, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to for me. If the stories aren't that great, I feel like we're constantly juggling artists on books. I feel like in some ways the artists are not being given the value that they need to be given on these books of being on a book for a period of time where you can establish a style, you know? So you have these constantly changing artists on a book where maybe the writer stays the same, but the artists keep changing. So you can never get into a definitive look for a particular book. The stories haven't been that great. And there's so many books that are constantly launching and relaunching. And then when you couple that with the fact that all of these other publishers are putting out amazing stuff, when you talk about IDW and you talk about Boom and you talk about Dark Horse and you talk about the books that are coming out of Image, I'm going to talk about The Old Guard, a new Image book today. Like, there's so many stuff that if you just look beyond Marvel and DC, there's so many things that are fantastic that if you're given even a little bit of reason to get off of one of the books that you've been collecting out of momentum and you actually see what else is out there, you're done. You're out.
Exactly.
And so, you know, we have listeners who will say all the time, well, I stopped reading Marvel and DC 4 or 5 years ago. I haven't picked up anything from them. It's because as soon as you pick your head up and realize, oh, holy crap, there's a billion amazing books out there. And if I'm not funneling all my money into these big two, oh, every single month, I can go spend it on these fantastic books that are coming out from other companies. And so the quality of the stuff that I see coming out of all of the other companies has continued to rise. So anytime Marvel or DC flounders, there's plenty of other companies that are there waiting to say, yeah, we got the type of stories that you want to see.
Think about if you and I lived in New York City, which has always been a dream of ours.
Oh, I think about that literally once
yes,
a week.
You do.
I think about, well, geez, my wife kicks me out. I could move to New York City.
Yeah, we'll
maybe just get a one-bedroom apartment.
Yep. So think about the fact that if we shopped at Jim Henley's Universe or Midtown Comics, we would be inundated with indie books all over the place. And our local shops – you could take 5 or 6 of them in the area, are really only ordering DC and Marvel. Maybe a few IDWs here and there, a couple Images here and there, because their store can't support the fact that if they misorder some Image book that doesn't sell, they're going to be kind of hurting on that one. But when you go to like a Jim Henley, you go to
Midtown
Comics, thank you very much. When you think about going in there and you go from A to Z, and you're going alphabetically, by the time you get to a DC book, you have seen 15 or 16 independent books.
Side by side.
Alphabetically,
yes.
In that row. Yeah. I mean, and I shop alphabetically. I go from A to Z, and I just start picking off the shelf. And I've done that. I've been at Midtown where I'm like, I'm not even at the D's, and I've already got 10 books in my hand. And,
right.
And it's a good thing,
Who's
but it's a
other
bad
store
thing.
The store that Vin has by his house does a really good job of that, too. And you notice that a lot of times you have walls dedicated to a Marvel or a DC as opposed to putting everything in general population together and letting people see all of that stuff side by side. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Like I you mentioned Jim Henley's. I haven't gone there where I haven't come out with a handful of books that I've never even seen before.
Yeah. Yep.
And you end up picking them up and walking out of there with them. So, yeah. And again, two old dudes sitting here talking about their opinions about something. Like, it, to me, it's just interesting to see where the big two are at right now. And it's, you know, it's like watching Sony and Microsoft with PlayStation and Xbox, where it's constantly, you know, this positioning for the top two spots. And then, you know, they're sort of everybody else. But to me, Marvel's woes are a combination of too much gimmickry with relaunches and number ones and all new, all this, change it over to the new thing kind of stuff that gives people reasons to stop reading your book, and a lack of quality stories in some of their flagship books. Like, I can't tell you the last time that I read an Avenger book.
Yeah.
Like, I literally cannot tell you. I'd have to go back and look at my long box of the last Avenger title that I bought, and I probably bought it because Spider-Man was on the cover of it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's where they've lost me. I'm not collecting any of the mainstream books. Like, this week it just came out with X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue, the Royals, whatever they were that came out this week as we're recording this. I looked at them and I thought, huh, maybe that's an X-Men book that I could get into. Oh, $5? Nope.
Yeah, it's, I didn't even bother putting it on my shelf. I didn't even think about that.
And I'm sure they ended up for a number one issue selling well, but you're relaunching all of these multiple series. You're starting off at $5.
Yeah.
You're not giving me a reason to get in. And that's to me where this whole thing is backwards. And it's not just Marvel and DC. It's a lot of these companies. Like, give me a reason to get in, not out. Like, exactly. You're giving me reasons to stay out. Give me a reason to come in. Make the first issue 99 cents. Make the first issue $1.99 and give me extra pages. Don't tell me $5 to get in on the ground floor of this book. I don't need to.
Yep.
I can't keep up with the books I'm already buying. You've just made my decision easy for me. So I would love to hear what people think. I know that there has been so much conversation about this the past couple of weeks, and this is not a great PR thing for Marvel right now. But I think they just really stuck their foot in the mouth with this one, because the fact is, some of their newer characters and some of their more diverse books are telling the best stories of any books that they're putting out right now. So for them to even come close to messaging the fact that those might be books that people are not interested in, that is, they're losing what little new audience they may have garnered over the past couple of years.
And so, marketing 101, don't open your mouth at anything. Follow the script. Don't ever go off script. Because it almost sounded like it was, hey, I'm going to give you a personal kind of get down and dirty.
And can you honestly tell me, like, seriously, if I said to you, if we were just having a conversation here today and I said, what do you think? Marvel's dropped from the top spot in sales, Matt. Why do you think that is?
Yeah.
Well, you know, your first response would probably be, well, the DC Rebirth thing has been going really well for DC, right? They seem to have flipped the perception of where they were a few years ago, where people didn't necessarily react well to the New 52. The response around Rebirth has been good. But in addition to that initial response, because that only carries you so far, the stories have been good.
Mm-hmm.
The books that I'm picking up have kept me. Sure, I'll check out something at $2.99, but you have to keep me. And they're doing a good job of keeping them. But when you look at why Marvel's slumping, it's because I'm not interested in a lot of the stories that they're telling right now with their main characters. Not their new characters, not the new kids on the block. I'm not interested in what's happening with Captain America. I'm not interested in what's happening with the Inhumans right now. I'm not interested in what's happening with the X-Men right now. So for me as a reader, it has literally nothing to do with Moon Girl or Squirrel Girl or Spider-Woman or Miss Marvel or any of the new books that they've launched. It has to do with the fact that it's actually the traditional heroes that have been around forever that I'm no longer interested in, because the stories that you're telling about them are stupid.
Yes.
And then you take a character like Carol Danvers, who had been on at least a 5-year run of being one of Marvel's most popular characters, and you end up making her the bad guy in a new Civil War story that felt stupid to begin with at its premise, and had everybody who knows her as a character saying, that's not, she wouldn't do that. That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't feel like Captain Marvel. And you have a movie coming out with her.
Yeah.
So now you have to rebuild. It's just so weird to me that they have misstepped so badly with that.
Yeah. It just seems like they think that everybody's going to keep coming back, and we're to the point where people aren't coming back.
But then we end up canceling a book like Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Maybe not launch the fifth X-Men series and let me keep Spider-Woman for crying out loud. Would that kill you?
Yep.
Because it garners goodwill. Even if by some chance a book is not selling that well, you're garnering goodwill by keeping a cult favorite. You know, even if it has a small but loyal audience, you are engendering goodwill by keeping a book like that as opposed to letting it go away. And, you know, as we'll talk about in a few minutes, Spider-Woman, to me, very bittersweet that we're losing that book. So anyways, lots to think about with that whole sales thing. And I'm sure there's been new situations that have popped over the past 2 days with the 24-hour news cycle. So let's talk about something positive, Matthew, and that is some of the upcoming shows that we are going to. Now, as people listen to this on Friday, if they're listening to this when it comes out,
yes,
they can get out of work tonight and run and get their tickets for a show that you'll be at this weekend.
Go to Marlboro, Mass, and go to Super Mega Fest. It is supermegafest.com. You've got Sergeant Slaughter. You've got me. You've got comic book. They've got a very good group of creators this year. They've got Peter David's going to be there, Chris Claremont. So you've got some of the biggies that are going to be there. And what's great about Super Mega Fest is that it is a show that you can get into and that there are a lot of people there, but there's a lot of people that are splitting up all the time. So you will have time with your creator friends and people that you want to get to talk to, celebrities even. So it's a fun show while Bill Sodas are going to be there. So I'll be drinking soda all weekend long.
I wouldn't mind meeting Sergeant Slaughter.
And my friend Andrew Edge, who did the second Doctor in my Doctor Who book and the cover for my soon-to-be-coming-out UFO book, is going to be sharing a table with
me. He'll
be
your table mate for the weekend.
He'll be my table buddy.
It's good. I like when I can't make a show, but I know you're in good hands.
Yes.
And Andrew's a great guy. So I feel like the parent who's okay that they're hanging out with the friend that I'm cool with this weekend.
And Andrew is bringing up a lot of his rock and roll art.
Yep.
So very good on that one.
Awesome. And then on the 22nd of April, you and I will be in Avon, Connecticut at the Avon Public Library for AvonCon 2017. Rise of the Villains is the theme of this one. You will be doing a Doctor Who panel. I will be doing a panel on creating a villain. If my print order that I just placed this morning is going to be coming back on time and everything looks good, I will have some fresh copies of the revised and updated edition of Making Ear Candy with a brand new cover by our good friend, Mr. Chris Giarrusso, which looks absolutely fantastic. Awesome. And in the print proof that I got last week, I absolutely am in love with that cover of the book. So I'll have that and I'll have my other books as well. And you'll have your books. So that's going to be really good. And then I know that you're going to a show the weekend of Free Comic Book Day,
yep,
correct?
Hudson Valley Comic Con in Poughkeepsie, New York, May 6th and 7th at the Gold's Gym. It was a great show last year, first year, second year, piling up to be an even better one.
Yep. And then I will be on Free Comic Book Day, I will be at the Forest Park branch of the Springfield Public Library because they will be having a Free Comic Book Day event there. So I'm all about the libraries in the next few weeks.
Libraries
that's,
are
that's
fun.
That's where I'm
good
hanging
places.
Out. In fact, I'm going, as soon as I leave here today, I'm going to go hang out at the library and just scope the place out and get ready for upcoming events.
Read newspapers on those big wooden poles.
All right. So quickly, let's just mention that my beard is looking awesome.
Yep.
I've gotten many comments on my beard from the pics that I posted of the Anthrax concert the other night, and I will give all credit to Viking Oils. If you go to VikingOilsLLC.com, you will see their wonderful array of products, but their beard oil has created what is being referred to some as an Odin-like beard. That's all. That's what I've heard. I've had many Odin's beard comments over the past few weeks. It's looking amazing. I'm torn because on the one hand, I usually, as we get into baseball season, start to trim it down and shave it. But I am also madly in love with it right now. And I just don't know which way I'm going to go.
I think you should go with the Scott Ian look.
I was told that the Scott Ian look is not a look that would look good on me. I was told that I would be better off with the Kerry King look, which is the goatee with the long beard as opposed to just the beard on the bottom of the chin.
Yep.
The whole soul patch turn beard thing, that did not go over well with anybody that I talked to about that.
So the focus group did not come back
the
positive.
Focus group was like, absolutely not that. Go with if you're going to do anything with that monstrosity, shave the sides and leave it long, but leave yourself a goatee. Do not shave your mustache and everything else and just have that beard coming off your face because that's not going to work for anybody.
Yep, you can like them on Facebook, VikingOilsLLC.com.
All right, so let's talk about comic books, Matthew, because that's what most people come here to talk about.
Yes.
Or to listen about. And we're going to start off with Green Lanterns number 15. This is a series that you have been reading since the rebirth relaunch.
And I've been kind of in and out of a couple. Like what I've been trying to do is collect different arcs just so I can kind of get a feel
for what's
going on.
Oh, you have jumped in and out. So you haven't necessarily picked all 15 issues up?
No, and this is one that I didn't pick up. This is an older one. My good friend John said, you need to read this book. And the way he described it was what that Supergirl episode did for that young girl that was lost and scared and lonely and wondering what to do with her life until she walked into a comic book store. This book does for people that are suffering from anxiety disorders. And, you know, not going into detail too much because I don't want to say anything, but I have several people in my life that are very close to me that really suffer from anxiety disorders. You know, we sometimes refer to them as panic attacks, but they are crippling moments. And I've seen people that I love and care about being crippled by certain fears, by irrational fears. I mean, I'm claustrophobic and I understand and will admit it's the most irrational fear in the world. I was up in my attic today because we had a little drip, so I had to go put some stuff up in there. And while I'm up there, I'm sweating like a pig. I am dying. I am shaking and scared because there wasn't enough oxygen up there. There's plenty of oxygen, but it's an irrational fear. And Jessica, the female Green Lantern, has a disorder. She has serious anxiety disorders, but she also has, is it agoraphobia? Leave your house?
Yeah, you don't want to
deal with
people in crowds and stuff like that.
Imagine being a Green Lantern given the most powerful weapon in the universe and you are afraid to leave your house. And the book starts with her laying in bed and she's narrating it and she's talking about the fact that I'm a Green Lantern. I should be able to do this. But I have anxiety. I can't even get out of bed. And she's getting messages and you're thinking, what is it? And then you see it's Simon is sending her a message. Now Simon's the other Green Lantern.
Her partner, yeah.
Which you want to talk about a book of diversity. You have a woman's Green Lantern and then you have a Muslim Green Lantern. And the best part about this is that is not the selling point for either character. Once they kind of got away from that, where when you met Simon Boaz, I believe is his last name, when you first met him, the Muslim Green Lantern, after a while you're like, it's not that good. But now that is just part of his character, I'm absolutely loving this guy. But he's like, Jessica, you there? It's Simon. It's time, you there. And he's like, look, I can't do this without you. And she's looking and she's panicking. And then you turn the page. And as silly as it is, it was him reaching out to her to say, look, you're supposed to meet me for breakfast. We're supposed to get pancakes. So they're sitting there and he's kind of just looking at her and she is narrating the whole book saying, I know what he's thinking. I know he thinks I'm weak. I know he thinks I'm a failure. I know he thinks that I'm messed up and I've got all sorts of problems. But you see that he's looking at her with love and compassion and he's trying to get her out of this zone that she's in. But it is really interesting that as she's struggling there, then the ring goes off and says, hey, we got a league emergency. We need to go. And they both take off and go take care of the things. And they're fighting a big sea monster outside of Louisiana. They go in there. And as they're battling, it's amazing to see. Like this monster picks up a sub and throws it towards a building. And it is Jessica with her power ring that is controlling it and stopping it from hitting a building. And she's got the will to do that until Superman and Wonder Woman show up to help her with it. Then she's down there. Everybody's kind of high-fiving her and telling her what a great job she did. Flash shows up and she's like, I think he's got a crush on me. And there was times in the Justice League book where the two of them started to date a little bit. And then you see that they get called out for another emergency and they're going over. And what is really interesting about this whole thing is that she is out there. She's busy. She's being a superhero. But you're also seeing the fact that if you know anything about a lot of anxieties, you overwork yourself. You keep yourself way too busy so you don't have to deal with the things that you're dealing with. And it seems like she is doing all this. And then all of a sudden, it all hits her. And that's another part of anxiety that happens is you may have done 2 years of awesome things and never had any issues. But then all of a sudden, you just get completely hit with something that to other people may look completely foolish. And you roll up into a ball. And that starts to happen where she's fighting a villain. And this villain is nothing. I mean, she picked up a sub and saved everybody in a building and on the sub. And you got this dude here with a six gun in like this old West outfit. And she is panicking about this. Then she gets a little nuts and knocks the guy down and almost killed him. And then Simon's saying, look, you had an easier shot. Why didn't you take the shot? And she's like, just back off. I need a minute, okay? And then he says to her, and this is where I read this and kind of got choked up, and I'm getting choked up about it now because I have said this before, where he looks at her and he says, what are you? Wait, again with the anxiety? And you look at her, and she just has this look on her face. I have said that several times to the people in my life that have struggled with it. I have said to them, because I don't understand anxiety. I don't have that issue. So for me, it's easy to look at it and say, look, why don't you just take a deep breath and relax? Worst thing you can say to anybody with anxiety issues. Learned my lesson several times about this one. And then she's saying, look, I'm freaking out over here. And he's like, look, I thought things were better with you. I thought things were okay. And then she starts to explain, you know what? They don't get better. You don't get better from this. You just learn to deal with it. And then she goes on for a few pages and really just has these moments of how she is explaining to herself, I know you can't ever get over this. You just got to cope. And then you see some of her coping mechanisms. And unfortunately, the biggest coping mechanism for her is lay in bed with headphones and kind of just hide from the world. She has suffered in relationships. She's suffered in jobs. They show her kickboxing because she's saying about how she likes to exercise to get the endorphins moving. And she created this big green bear and she's kicking it around. Then she's having dinner or she's doing dishes with her sister. And it was funny because her sister's like, hey, so was the Flash here today? And she's like, oh, you'd be quiet. And then she's sitting on the couch petting her cat and saying and just going through and saying, you know, this isn't going to work and I'm really struggling. And then you see her in bed. Her room is a mess. The ring is on her bed and it's saying, look, Jessica, you need to come here. Please come to the diner. You've got to come. I can't handle it. I can't handle you not being here. So he's like, look, I just want you to be here. There's something I can do. And if there's anything I can do. And then you have this whole page that again was, I'll show you, Brian, just the swirling in her brain. I've been told that it's almost like, I mean, it's kind of a outdated concept, but for us old folks, it is like having 50 cassettes playing horrible messages in your brain at the same time. And that's what cripples you. And she's going through all this stuff and she's like, I can't handle this. I can't handle this. And everything that she sees is, I can't handle this. It's all my fault. It's all the negative. And then she, you know, the ring starts to glow. And then you see her put 1 foot on the floor, 2 feet on the floor. She puts the ring on and she says, I'm a Green Lantern. And then she starts to go downstairs and Simon is in her kitchen. And she's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, well, I thought that you were having a hard time and I just wanted to come here and see you. And then you see this look on her face like, oh, my God, what did you just do? And you see that he made breakfast. He made her pancakes because every time they go to the restaurant, he's looking at, we're going to have breakfast at the restaurant because I want you to get out of the house. He's now realizing that that's not what she wants. She just needs a friend. So she, you know, he's like, you know, I can't believe this. You're going to make me cry. I can't believe that. First of all, you're seeing me in my pajamas right now. And then they sit down and they have breakfast and they have a great moment and they finally get to finish the breakfast and they're talking. And she's like, you know what? This means a lot to me. And it was interesting because if you've not read the Simon Boaz character of Green Lantern, he's kind of been a jerk. Like he's had a lot of stuff thrown at him. He's had to fight a lot of things. And you're seeing him here smiling at her. And they've also battled. These two have been battling like crazy. But you actually see that they kind of come to an understanding in this one. And then their rings start to go off. And then you see that Batman is giving a message saying, listen, I need to talk to you. Something happened yesterday. I think you need to get here. Meet me in Gotham. And then you see that the two of them take off. And this, unfortunately, was an arc that I didn't read, which my friend Jim said, you've got to read this. It's Darkest Nights. And it was a couple issues, but it was why, because Simon carries a gun. And after this, Simon doesn't carry a gun anymore. And that was one of the things. So a really, really, really just amazing story. And the creative team, Sam Humphries is the writer. Tom Derenek does the thumbnails. The pencils are Miguel Mendoca and Scott Hanna, our good friend, does the inks on this one. So an amazing book that if you look at it again, you're dealing with something that a lot of people are dealing with. And I hate to say it took a Green Lantern comic for me to kind of realize a few things, but it certainly helped. And I left this book for a couple of the people to read. And hopefully, I know one of them read it and said, wow, it really gives an insight. But it's a tough thing. And if you know people that are dealing with anxiety, don't ever, ever say just relax.
Yeah, I can certainly tell you that I have dealt with anxiety and deal with anxiety. And there are certain things that that can spark that.
Yep.
But there are also times where that happens and there is no what anyone else would see logical reason yep. for that happening. And those are the scariest times because you can't trust your own way of thinking about yeah. things. And, you know, for me, the most difficult part of dealing with anxiety is that when you consider yourself to be a very logical person who can organize things and think through things and solve problems and do all of this kind of stuff. And when you're dealing with anxiety, for me, one of the most difficult things is not being able to process myself out of it. You know what I mean? Like not yep. being able to sit, like, I can figure things out. I'm a person who figures things out. And then I'm sitting there thinking, why can't I figure this out? Like, why can't I get myself to the other side of this? And that's almost more terrifying than anything yeah. else, because you tend to not think of you don't kind of perceive the way you think as something that can sort of betray you. And so when it does, it's absolutely horrifying because you realize how not in control you can be. And when that happens, it's very, very scary. And yeah, usually it's not that acute for me, but there have been times where it has been, and that is absolutely terrifying. And so it sounds like that book did a nice job of being respectful and also realizing that it can be different for different people yeah. and the way that they cope and the way that they process through that is going to be different for different people. So I'd be interested to see what the reviews of that were like and what other people were saying about it. But yeah, it can be very debilitating sometimes yeah. for sure. Okay. Well, deep breath, Matthew.
Yep.
Because we're going to talk about a book now that, while it has brought me great sadness, it is also brought me great joy. And that is Spider-Woman, because Spider-Woman number 17 is the final issue of Spider-Woman. And that is heartbreaking to me. However, the fact that the creative team got to wrap this series up in a way that does justice to the storylines that they've been telling and also to the characters in this book is wonderful. So unlike some of the books that we talked about before, like a Ghost Rider that got basically cut short in the middle of a run, yeah. here with Spider-Woman, we have a fantastic last issue. And the writer here is Dennis Hopeless, who has just done a great job on this book all the way through. His vision for Spider-Woman has been fantastic. The supporting cast has been fantastic. Veronica Fish, who has come on to this book, and you had Javier Rodriguez before, Veronica Fish has come on to this book and just nailed it. And we had a chance to talk back at Plastic City Comic Con last year. And the other book that she's doing right now that I adore is called Slam, and it's coming out from Boom. It's the roller derby book, and it's just absolutely wonderful. But she has done an amazing job on this book. Rochelle Rosenberg, colorist, amazing. You have Travis Lanham, who does the letters. Javier Rodriguez has been doing the covers. And the editor on this book is Devin Lewis. Just a phenomenal job. So what's been happening, as we've talked about many times before in Spider-Woman, is that you have the Porcupine, this guy Roger, who is sort of a D-list villain that ends up going legit very early on in the series and ends up becoming Jessica's sidekick and also like her Manny, because he watches her baby Jerry, because that was the big thing when they relaunched Spider-Woman again, was that she's pregnant. And so he basically becomes, you know, her nanny and also fights crime with her and becomes her sidekick. And so what we recently had over the past few issues is that they finally sort of confessed their feelings for one another. He had been just completely falling in love with her throughout this series, and it kind of ended up clicking for Jess that, yeah, she was kind of falling in love with him too. And so what we get as we open up this issue here is that they are planning a rooftop party at Jess's apartment building, and it is very reminiscent of the first issue of this new series where there was a big party on her rooftop and everybody was trying to guess what was going on with the baby and everything. Well, we're revisiting that, because now she's having all of her friends over, but her and Roger are a couple. And so she is now thinking about what all of her superhero friends are going to think of Roger. And Roger's not really that worried about it, but Jess is kind of really worried about it. And you have Carol there, who their friendship is back to where it needs to be now after the stuff that had happened in Civil War II, where they kind of weren't on the same page. Now everything's cool with them. And Carol has kind of accepted the fact that the two of them are together. And Jess says to him, you know, Carol likes you at least. And he's like, no, Carol tolerates me barely. And she said, that's how Carol looks. If she's tolerating you, she's liking you. That Carol Surly, that's just the way that she is. And what I love is that Veronica Fish and Javier Rodriguez before her, they do such a great job of showing you the body language and the facial expressions that really just convey a ton. The panel work is absolutely wonderful here as well. So they're planning this big party. The baby Jerry is downstairs sleeping. And the next thing you know, the two of them are sharing a kiss on the rooftop. And when they turn around, everybody's there. And she's like, oh, hey, how's it going? And Spidey's like, hey, where can I put this bean dip? And as they turn around and she's going to awkwardly introduce him, the baby monitor goes off and Roger's like, oh, I got to go. I got to run downstairs. And he goes down to see the baby and leaves Jessica up there on the rooftop with all of her friends. And she's feeling like they're all judging her. Like, here is Spider-Woman and she is dating this guy who is, they know, as this complete loser, D-list villain. That she's kind of taken on as a rehab case to try and help him go legit. And so she's feeling really awkward right now. So he goes downstairs and he's like, you know, how's a guy even supposed to make mouth words with all these superheroes up here and everything? And he's like shoving pretzels into his mouth. And he's like, I'm just going to take a break. I'm just going to chill out down here for a second. And he goes in to check on the baby and the baby's on the ceiling. And he's like, holy crap. And the baby also has the zapping powers of Jess. Mm. So he's now trying to figure out how to corral the baby. He's got to go get his porcupine gloves because they're like shock absorbing. So he's chasing the baby around in the apartment. She, meanwhile, upstairs is just absolutely dying because she's just feeling like everybody's eyes are on her. Everybody's judging her. She sees the look on Black Widow's face and she could tell that Natasha's got something to say. So she's just waiting to hear what's going to come out of her mouth. And then you have this great two-page splash where you have the baby kind of going around the room and Roger's trying to corral the baby. The baby ends up going out the window and crawling up the side of the building and Roger has to chase him out the window. So Jess is up there downing wine left and right. And all of a sudden you have Natasha say, Jess has shagged herself a clown and is basically talking about, and so Jess goes up and challenges her and Carol tries to get in the middle of it. And the two of them are going back and forth. And as they're arguing, you see behind Jess, the baby is climbing up the light pole behind her. And you see Roger like climbing up behind him, trying to get the baby and everybody is just staring. So then of course the focus immediately turns to, we have to save the baby. Spidey comes over and he grabs him, but the baby shocks him and he drops the baby. Then Carol catches the baby. The kid's got super strength. So he kicks Black Widow in the face and you have a moment where the baby ends up in like the chip bowl. And the chip bowl's teetering on the edge of the building and everybody wants to rush in and save him. And Roger's saying, hey man, he's just playing. We all have to be cool. We all have to act like everything's cool. And then he'll calm down and everything will be okay. And you see that he spent so much time with the baby, Jerry, that he knows the kid. And so he's like, everything's cool. Everything's all right. And you have him go over and reach his hand out to the kid. But when the baby reaches out to him, he shocks him and the blast knocks him off the side of the building. So the baby goes over the side of the building without even thinking. Roger immediately jumps off the building. He has no superpowers. He immediately jumps off over the building and Spidey has to basically save the two of them by webbing them up and pulling them back up there. But everybody at the party saw that he, without any second thought, immediately would sacrifice his life for the kid. So now everybody likes him. And there's a great moment where everybody is upstairs partying and you have Ben and Roger, because Ben Urich is a big part of this book. You have Ben and Roger and Carol and Jess who are downstairs putting the baby to bed and they're just hanging out together, the four of them, while everybody else is on the rooftop partying. And that's the way that the issue ends. And it's very touching and it's extremely well done. And there are some great goodbyes and thank yous from the creative team in the back letters page of this. I have to tell you that, and I was just talking to somebody about this series today, Spider-Woman has been a joy to read. This series has been fantastic. I have loved every single issue of it, and I'm sad that it's gone. I'm really sad that it's gone, but what I am happy about is that it was a complete story.
Yeah.
And so now we have that. And I can buy it and trade and I can put it on my bookshelf and I can enjoy the fact that this is now a whole story. And a lot of series don't get that. A lot of series don't get to end in a way that feels like there's closure. And this story feels like it was a good story, well told, and we have an ending and everything's great. I hope all these characters come back. I hope they appear in another book, either together or maybe Spider-Woman gets another series. But man, when this stuff is all out in trade, and I think three volumes of it are out now, I cannot recommend the series highly enough. It is fantastic.
Yeah, you've liked it since they relaunched it into a street-level book.
It's just great. And I don't know what the future holds for Spider-Woman, but man, this series was fantastic.
So we've been talking about some events. We were talking about Civil War. And IDW a few months back did a major event, and that was Revolution. Revolution took all the toy properties and mushed them into one world and had them do a battle royal and then sort of set the playscape for what we're going to be doing for the rest of
the merging
careers.
Of the universe, which yes. is basically what they're doing with the movie properties.
Yep. And it's interesting because now available is a 348-page collection that collects Revolution's issue 0 through 5 plus 8 one-shots and an expanded cover gallery for $49.99.
You know what, dude? That's a good price, first of all. And if it is complete and has like all the Revolution stuff yep. in it, I could see myself picking that up.
And I'll show you the cover because the cover is very cool. Very, yeah. very, you know, political, you know, communistic poster looking
like
thing.
Propaganda posters.
Propaganda
yeah.
art, yeah.
And the thing about that series is that I have a few issues that have the Revolution brand on them, but I didn't have the whole series.
Yep. So we are going to spend a lot less money, $4, on Oh Yeah, Revolution. This is now Art Baltazar's version of what happened in Revolution. And one issue in it, and I'm such an Art Baltazar fan, he could draw a horrible book and I would still be thinking this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Visually and art and writing wise, I just love everything this guy does.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, him and Franco, they had done Patrick the Wolf Boy before.
Yes.
But it was Tiny Titans that blew everything up, right? That that basically became the phenomenon for them.
Yes. And that's kind of the whole, oh yeah, that's where that came out of was.
Right. And then all of these other companies have subsequently brought these guys in to do their version of all of these different properties.
We've had Baby Archie, we've had Baby Hellboy, we've had all sorts, and every one of them have been amazing.
Right.
And also go out, I'm glad you mentioned it, go out and get some Patrick the Wolf Boy because those are phenomenal. So we start out beyond our galaxy, deep within the cosmos, beyond all time and space, exists something evil. And you see in the microspace world, it is the home of Baron Karza. And Baron Karza is sitting there going, oh yeah, Revolution has begun. And he's with his horse Andromeda. Now he can, in the toy, you took Andromeda's head off and his legs off and he went in and became sort of a minotaur kind of thing. If that was that what it was, the horse and the body, guy body, whatever that is.
A horse with a guy body?
Or the guy head, the guy torso?
You're talking about a centaur.
Centaur. So he's like a centaur.
The minotaur is the bull-headed creature in the middle of the labyrinth.
Yeah, not him. So he's telling his horse Andromeda, this Snake Eyes character is pretty cool. What a guy. I need him in my collection. So he's talking about the fact that Snake Eyes is his favorite superhero. And he says, but you know what? Chillaxing time has come to an end, good brother. Our evil bidding and time for planning has to continue. So he says, we're going to go to Earth and I am going to steal Snake Eyes. So as he's heading to Earth, he's going there and he's looking around and he sees that the Orbisa gem, which is the powering controller of the Transformers. It's what gives them their power.
The Orbisa gem? That doesn't sound right.
So I know that there's something there that controls, let's see. So I thought that was the thing that powered.
I mean, I'm no Transformers lore master, but that there's a thing. But I want to keep saying it's like the Omnitrix, but that's not it.
So right here, it says a mystical ancient artifact. It just so happens to be the topic of controversy among some giant robot beings, those dreaded Transformers.
Okay.
I think that's what gives them the power. And then I know that's how Revolution started, with them trying to get this orb, this power stuff that was out there. And then he says, ha, there'll be no match for the might of Baron Karza and you too, Andromeda. So let's go cause some chaos. And meanwhile, in the other part of the galaxy, you've got Rom looking for the Dire Wraiths and he's flying around and he gets hit by a little bit of an asteroid and he heads down to this other asteroid. And these aliens come out and they're the Dire Wraiths and they're coming after him. And he's like, come on, let's talk about this. You guys got to stop threatening the human race. You know, we can do this easy or we can do it. Uh-oh, here we go. And then they get him and they start attacking him. They got their tentacles around him. And then all of a sudden he gets put in a little, like a dome. And he looks down and he sees Baron Karza, teeny tiny. And he's like, who are you? He goes, I'm Baron Karza and you're going to come with me. And then all of a sudden he pulls him out of the orb. The orb is gone. And then no more Rom.
I like when people announce their names.
Yes. And that is...
I'm Matthew Herring. And yes. I'm going to tell you about this comic book.
So you're going to love some of the G.I. Joe stuff that goes on in here then.
I am
so
a G.I. Joe fan.
It says elsewhere, and you see, watch out, Cobra's attacking. So they're down there. They're doing all their fighting. And then Cobra Commander's going, curse you, G.I. Joe.
I like
curse
that. Curse you. Yep, that's right where Cobra Commander needs to be.
They're shooting back and forth. You got three Joes that are behind a rock as the Cobra guys are coming after them. And they're like, it's an ambush. Time to call for backup. And then all of a sudden, Snake Eyes shows up. He comes popping out. And then you got Baron Karza going, Mr. Snake Eyes, it's an honor to be in your presence. Please forgive me, but you must come with me.
Why does it got to be Snake Eyes?
Huh?
Why does it got to be Snake Eyes?
I don't know.
Why not Quick Kick?
So he grabbed him. And I kept waiting. I'm like waiting for when they said something about getting ambushed. I was waiting for like the other Joes to show up. And then he disappears. And then you see all the Joes looking down at this little spot of smoke going, Snake Eyes? Soon hidden deep within the mountain of an earth, you have... Karza come back for that gem, and he goes, finally, it's going to be mine. And he grabs it, and then all of a sudden it turns into this Indiana Jones thing where the temple starts to fall in, everything caving in.
So you're selling me on this series so far.
And now we've got three Transformers that are outside.
And it sounds more serious than an Aw Yeah book.
Yes.
It sounds like there's a legit...
There's like a threat.
Yeah.
There's some bad stuff going on. So all of a sudden they're out there, and the only guy... Who's the main one? That is...
Talking about Duke?
No, for the Transformers, the
Optimus Prime, Matthew.
That guy.
You're going to get us shut down.
Yeah, so Optimus like, Prime, and then there's a yellow one and a pink one.
And, yellow one sounds probably Bumblebee without even looking at him.
Yep, I think so.
And then the pink one.
I'm just going to assume she's a girl Transformer because she's wearing pink.
Oh, what is her name though?
Maybe they'll say. We'll see what happens. So. All of a sudden, the mountain starts crumbling, and then Baron Karza, even teenier, tinier than the way everybody else sees him, he is on Optimus Prime's shoulder, and Optimus Prime can't even see him because he's so small, and he's like, hey, one more thing before I go. You got to come with me, and then he takes him, and then you see the other Transformers looking around going, Optimus, where are you? So now in space, you have these green globes that are floating, and you've got Rom in there going, oh, I'm encased in some kind of force bubble. And Baron Karza comes up and says, that's correct, fool. Say hello to your captured neighbor, Snake Eyes and Optimus Prime. And the
Nobody captured Snake Eyes.
Well, this guy did.
That did not happen.
Orb saw a gem. And with this, I shall drain your powers. So he starts.
RC.
What is it?
RC.
RC. Yep. Okay. So he's starting to drain their powers. And he says.
I was going to say this like Blaze or something.
He says, together, with all your powers, I'm going to control the universe. Ha ha hee ho. And now you have in the microverse a Kroyer and Space Glider are saying, hey, something's disrupting the balance of the microverse. Looks like supersized beings. And they're seeing what's going on, and they realize that Baron Karza is in the middle of it. So the Micronauts, we have a mission. And what I loved about this is that you are getting almost the old Marvel team of Space Glider and a Kroyer and Biotron and Microtron. And they take off.
I don't know who any of those people are.
So see, now you know how I feel with the Transformers.
That's true. You know what? You're right. Because if you ask me any name of any... Micronaut, I got nothing.
Yep. And then a Kroyer says, our call to action is now. And then it says, oh yeah, to be continued. And I'll show you the next page, Brian, or the cover for the second issue. You've got, I don't know, who's the white ninja that fights with Cobra?
Are you talking about Storm Shadow?
Storm Shadow. So Storm Shadow is right here in this cover.
People are just smashing their phones on the ground right now.
But then
who's the white ninja? Literally the two most recognizable, actually the three most recognizable characters of the entire G.I. Joe universe are probably Cobra Commander,
yep,
Storm Shadow, and Snake Eyes.
But I got Cobra Commander. I knew who he was. He's
with
the,
Destro being like a fourth.
And Destro's the silver face dude.
Yes.
Cobra Commander's got the shield on his face.
Correct.
Okay, so I got those right.
Yes.
So despite the fact that I did not know who the people were as far as the Transformers and a couple of the Joes, this book
You are making me want to go and A, watch the Transformers movie again because I cannot for the life of me remember what the stupid in the movies they're calling it like the Allspark or something like that.
Yeah, but it's
like
I think that's what it was in the movie.
Now, in the Transformers movie, it was this thing that you had to pull apart because it was the shielding around the orb and with Rodimus Prime and all that kind of stuff. I haven't seen that movie since it came out.
Are you talking about the one that came – the movie?
I'm talking about the one
cartoon
that the Transformers swear in. Yeah, the movie.
Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I love that movie. So amazing book. I cannot wait to get the next issue of this one. This is, again, no matter what Baltazar does, or Franco, and or Franco, I love it. Everything. Mm. Great, fun, cute. Love it.
Speaking of fun, our last book of the day is pretty darn hysterical, and I don't know why I just opened up Netflix on my tablet when I meant to pull up this particular book. And that book, Matthew, if I can ever find it in here, is AmeriKarate.
AmeriKarate.
Now, I don't know if you're a fan of such movies as American Ninja.
Yes, with
Michael Dudikoff.
Michael Dudikoff, who it's so funny when you think about where he got his debut in Bachelor Party as sort of the geeky restaurant guy. That's him. And then all of a sudden, 5 years later, the dude's muscle bound and
I'm glad we had a Michael Dudikoff conversation here. Or, you know, Jim Cotta. Or, you know,
I own Jim Cotta.
One of the greatest movies of all time. We should do it. Have we never done a Saturday matinee on Jim Cotta?
We never have, and we need to.
Holy moly.
I showed people the trailer at work because people were going, because somebody said that there was a Jim Cotta reference.
I forget what the name of the country is that he goes to, but I always think of like Simcara, the one that Silver Sable is from.
It's like Bazakistan.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
which just happens to have a pommel horse in these times in the town square.
If you like 80s. American 80s kung fu movies that were really not good.
Yes.
Then you're going to love AmeriKarate from Action Lab Danger Zone. So right now you know what you're getting yourself into. This book is written by Corey Kalman and Brockton McKinney. It is illustrated by Devin Roth. Letters by Dave Dwanch. And the editor here, editor-in-chief is Sean Gaborin. So it says, in a world that outlawed karate, one man fights for his right to fight karate for America with karate. AmeriKarate.
I'm freaking in.
You're sold, right? You're sold already.
I love it.
So we start out in the desert outside of a little town in the middle of nowhere called Baconville. And you see that when you see the sign for the town, there is a chain and a bucket hanging from it where all martial arts weapons are inside this bucket. So apparently, in order to come into this town, you have to leave your martial arts weaponry at the border of the town. So he takes his nunchucks out and he says, what do you think, Rick? And you see that Rick is his companion, who we're really not introduced to yet, who has no arms and no legs and is being carried in a knapsack on his back. So, and he looks like a combination between Brock Sampson and Sylvester Stallone from Rambo. So he shows up to this town and he says, oh, I love it, Sam. And so they decide they're going to go into town. And it says, AmeriKarate, the town that hated karate, is the first storyline. So he walks in and he goes into the local bar and he says, you know, he's asking the bartender for a drink. And he's talking to Sam, who's his companion. And he hangs the poor guy on a clothes hanger as he walks in where everybody else's coats are. He puts them there. He's like, oh, thanks, Sam. This is the perfect spot for me. And the bartender goes, what's with Jack in the bag over there? And he says, that happens to be my brother. And he lost his arms and legs in a karate accident. And the bartender's like, oh, karate, huh? And he goes over and he picks up the phone and makes a phone call. So the guy orders a couple of drinks. Well, 2 seconds later, he turns around and the mayor is there with all of his goons.
Because the mayor has goons.
And the mayor, and all of a sudden you see our main character here, who's, I believe his name is Sam, he's getting fired up. Because he doesn't like what's going on in this town already. They're already giving him a problem, which is very much like Rambo.
Yep.
He just got into town. They're already giving him attitude. And the mayor says, is that a fist in your hand or are you just happy to see me? And he turns around and it looks like he's lashing out with a punch. But what he does is he smacks his beer mug and sends it over to his brother, who's hanging on the hook on the wall over there. And he's like, I'm just passing my thirsty brother a drink. And the mayor's like, listen, kid, I don't like strangers coming into my town with their tiger claws and their Wu-Tang clans. You guys have your big boy drinks and then get out of here. So this guy, Sam, is looking at him like, it might be go time here. And his brother's kind of like, you know what, maybe we should just get out of here. And they start making fun of all the patrons in the bar. And then they decide to take off. And they're going to get a room to rent because they're going to stay in town like one more night or something like that. So they go rent a room, which is basically them renting a barn from a woman in town. And he's like, this is perfect. He's like, does it cost any more for the manure smell that comes with the room? And she's like, no. So after she leaves, he has a straight out of Footloose moment where he is in the barn listening to 80s music on cassette and doing karate.
Nice.
So he's in the bar doing karate, and it ends with him, and there's shot for shot some scenes from Footloose in here as he's dancing around, and he's sweating and everything, and then he chops the boombox in half, and he turns around, and she's standing there, and she's like, were you just doing karate? No, I was just turning off the boombox with my hand. And so he's like, what's the problem with karate around here? And why don't people like karate in this town? And she's like, it's ninjas. And he says, what are you talking about? Well, you know, not long ago, a bunch of ninjas came into town and they stole our cattle and they stole all of our crops and they stole the mayor's wife. And that was my mother. So he's like, I lost my country when I came back from the war. And even though, and I won't give it up, eventually I'm going to get my country back. I understand what your pain is like. And she says, so does that mean eventually I'll get my mother back? No, she's probably dead. I mean, it's been 5 years. That's a long time to be kidnapped by ninjas. So the dialogue in this book is just gold. And next day, so the two of them end up making out. And the next day, he's walking through town. And all of a sudden, this guy who looks like a supervillain walks up to him. And he talks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he's carrying like a mace. And he comes over and he's like, who the heck are you supposed to be? I'm Johnny Kabrowski. And I'm going to bite off your face. Then I'm going to smack you around. And he goes on and tells him like all these horrible things that he's going to do to him. So the guy decides that he's going to fight him. And he starts running at him. And he's not really using his kung fu yet or his karate yet. So he runs over and this guy smacks him in the face with a mace and it starts beating the crap out of our hero Sam here. And as he's going to go in for the killing blow, all of a sudden his brother comes flying out of the bag and takes the killing blow for him and gets impaled on the mace. And as his brother is dying in his arms, he's saying, when we get me that shopping cart with the cushion in it, can we take a road trip across America? Yeah, sure, brother, we'll do that. And so his brother ends up dying in his arms. And he says, go get that guy for me and for America. So he puts his brother down and then he decides he's going to fight this guy with kung fu. So he starts breaking out or the karate and kicks the living crap out of this guy and absolutely destroys him. And when he's done, he turns around and he sees that all the town people are standing there and they kick him out of town because he just used karate.
Yep.
And he says, look, I'll leave. But remember, only someone that fights for his right to fight is someone that deserves the right to fight. And he says, America Roddy. And then he decides to leave town and he smashes the sign for the town as he leaves, and it's to be continued. So that book was ridiculously fun. I was laughing out loud as I was reading it. It is such an homage to how stupid so many of the karate and kung fu movies that came out of America were back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And it is just a joy. So if you have read any of the Action Lab Danger Zone stuff, then you know they do a great job both with their licensed stuff and their original stuff. And this is a book that absolutely should be picked up because it is hysterical. And I can't wait to see what happens next because now he's on the warpath.
Oh, yeah.
Now there's going to be real trouble. So there you go. So those are our books for this week. We're going to wrap up this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week. And we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.